to Woods and Water, South Carolina, the first live show of 2016. Hope you enjoyed the last couple. It was kind of weird to be back in here. It's been a few weeks, but it's been fun. Been really busy. Just got back from the Archery Trade Association show from this week, and boy, there's a lot of archery equipment out there. Goodness gracious alive, you would not believe all the stuff. Today's show, if you're a deer hunter, you want to listen, because this is going to be your opportunity to hear both the audio from the public meetings that were held last summer on the new deer legislation, and in the second half of the show, we're going to hear from Charles Ruth. He's going to be joining us live on the phone, and we're going to be, for the whole second half of the show, we're going to be discussing questions that I've pulled off of various Facebook group deer hunter pages. If you have a question, and I may have it already, if I don't, if I can fit it in, I will. You can text that question to 877-235-9405. 877-235-9405 is the text line. If you want to try to get a question in to ask Charles Ruth about the proposed deer regulations here in South Carolina. So without further ado, we're going to go ahead and roll this video. And if I didn't say it, you're welcome. Yeah, I did say welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Okay. We're going to roll the video, the audio part of the meetings that were held across the state on the deer regulations. Listen closely. A lot of information here. Roll out at the end and then have Charles Ruth on the second half. So listen closely and learn something.
My name's Charles Ruth, and I'm a wildlife biologist with SCDNR, and I coordinate the deer and wild turkey programs for the agency. I want to thank you on behalf of SCDNR for taking time to be involved in deer management in South Carolina. This presentation was given at the meetings the agency sponsored related to buck limits and deer tagging programs in South Carolina. Following the presentation, you will be given the opportunity to complete the questionnaire that was given at the meetings. There are three primary things that DNR considers when making recommendations to the legislature: doing what is in the best interest of the resource based on science and biology, providing constituents with as much opportunity to recreate as possible, as long as it doesn't negatively impact the resource, and finally, providing this opportunity based on the desires of constituents, again, as long as it doesn't negatively impact the resource. A couple of ground rules here. The purpose of these meetings is not to discuss season dates for deer, still hunting versus dog hunting, baiting, or hog and coyote control. On the other hand, the purpose of these meetings is to determine if hunters support a limit on antlered bucks, a tagging system for all deer to provide enforcement on the limit, and a better ability to manage doe harvest in the future, and to find out if hunters support responding to changes in our deer population to provide better management and hunting in the future. A little bit of background. If you look at the current buck limits in South Carolina, it's important to understand that they're not a function of DNR. They're set by the legislature. If we look at game zones 1 and 2, which are the Piedmont and mountain sections of the state, the law says that there's 5 per season per game zone per hunter. That's never been enforceable. In game zones 3 and 4, which are the coastal plain game zones, state law says that there's no daily or seasonal limit on antlered bucks. Now, this lack of a reasonable bag limit on bucks is in stark contrast to the approach in other states and to the approach with other fish and game species in South Carolina, which typically have limits. We have limits on rabbits, we have limits on squirrels, we have limits on quail, etc. And now there are even limits on blue catfish in some areas. But by all accounts, buck deer, which is our probably most valuable resource, there is no limit on buck deer. Now, if we look around and look at buck limits in the southeast, we see that they're generally between 1 and 3. And if we want to focus for a minute on Alabama, Alabama now has a 3 per season limit on antlered deer. One of those antlered deer has to have at least 4 points on one side. Alabama used to be the next best example to South Carolina, because they've got a real long season, and historically they had a 1 buck per day limit, so there was basically no limit. Well, their hunters kind of got tired of that approach, and in a matter of a few years, they changed it to the current three per season. Again, continuing throughout the Southeast, you see these limits of generally two or three. Nationally, all other states are similar, and particularly as you move out west, there seems to be even more conservative approaches the further west you go. This obviously leaves South Carolina as the outlier. Now, if we look at tagging programs nationally, if we exclude South Carolina and Hawaii, Hawaii has no native deer, that's going to leave 48 states. 46 of 48 states have either a physical carcass tag that attaches to the deer or a license notch or punch type of tagging system. Mississippi and Florida don't have tags, but they have antler restrictions on all the bucks that are harvested, so that's kind of a backdoor approach to having some conservation oriented toward bucks. Again, this leaves South Carolina as the obvious outlier. Our state's deer population has changed. There are generally fewer deer in most areas. The deer harvest has declined a little over 30% since it peaked around the turn of the century. However, there are still some areas where deer numbers and reports of agricultural damage remain high. This graph depicts the harvest history of deer in South Carolina. Most of us were, or many of us, I should say, were around in the mid to late 90s when the deer population really peaked. A lot of us were fighting deer in the 90s because, you know, it was just hard to harvest enough to keep that population from increasing annually. However, really around the turn of the century and since, that dynamics have changed, and the slope of that graph has really been down since that time. Now, having fewer deer in South Carolina is a good thing in many areas compared to the late 90s. As I already mentioned, a lot of us were fighting deer, you know, this eruptive deer population in the 90s. However, we don't want to see, you know, the current declines continue in many areas. Keep in mind that we're talking about a relative decrease. South Carolina's harvest is still ranked number one in the Southeast in terms of harvest per square mile. Why the decrease? Well, a couple of things, three in particular. Changes in habitat conditions associated with forestry management. You know, our state is dominated by commercial pines, and we all can appreciate once these pines get to a certain age class, they lose productivity. Much more use of intense site preparation techniques like herbicide these days. And I'm not knocking pine trees or herbicide use. I'm just stating that that does change the playing field. It changes productivity for deer. Secondly, many years of extremely liberal deer harvest. Again, these high harvests were necessary to stop population growth back in the 90s. And finally, the complete colonization of the state by coyotes since the turn of the century. And I know that, you know, coyotes have been in South Carolina since the 70s, but at that time, and really for many years, it was a novelty to see a coyote. It seems like really since the turn of the century, they've gotten out in all counties in kind of a critical mass type situation, and they've been able to expand and now have an impact on our deer population. If we look at it, we actually did a very solid study that we all should be proud of. This study was funded by revenue that's earmarked. It's DOTAG revenue that's earmarked to go into our deer program. This was a cooperative study between the United States Forest Service Southern Research Station and DNR. It was done at Savannah Riverside. We were on the ground on that study for 7 years, and what we were able to document over the course of that study was significant fawn predation by coyotes, you know, in terms of 50%+. We also tested the idea that reducing coyote densities by trapping would increase fawn survival. And it did, but only moderately, and it was very expensive. And I think the take-home message from this research is, you know, shoot coyotes when you see them and trap them if you have the time and money to do that, but they're here to stay. And they're going to play a role in our deer management in the future. That's what makes it more important now than ever to make adjustments to how we manage deer. Now, oftentimes we get comment from hunters that we've got a good management program on our property, but we just aren't getting good results. People around us shoot every buck they see. Well, does this really matter? If we take a look at another study that we were involved in, this was a cooperative study with Clemson University, again funded by revenue from our DOTAG program. This was a radio telemetry study looking at deer movement and mortality. It was a five-year study. It was a 14,000-acre study site located in Georgetown and Williamsburg County. It was private property. They had a good deer management program. They had an antler restriction on bucks. And what we found was that survival of bucks through 4 years was zero. Now, obviously, they were harvesting some of these bucks on the property once they got to meet their criteria, but it was kind of compelling that none of them survived through 4 years. On the other hand, doe survival through 4 years was 48%. And I think that's why it oftentimes can look bad in terms of sex ratios in many areas. And what was happening in this study was largely related to year-and-a-half-old bucks. When they enter their year-and-a-half-old fall, they leave their mother's home range and tend to get in trouble. In this case, they were typically about half of them were getting off the property, and they were being harvested by hunters on adjacent lands. Now, not that there's anything wrong with that, but in a situation where you don't have any types of limits, it can really impact, you know, what you're trying to do. So, yes, the goals you have on your property can be affected by adjacent properties. Again, this can be particularly the case if there's no limit on bucks and hunters really take advantage of it around you. Many hunters say that they believe there's a relatively small proportion of hunters that take advantage of the current system to harvest a lot of bucks. Well, is that true or false? If we look at our harvest data, there have been about 3 million deer harvested in South Carolina since the year 2000. The average hunter takes less than 2 bucks per year. So why would the current system be a problem? But if we take a closer look, what we find is that over the last 14 years, only 7% of hunters average killing more than 4 bucks per year. However, these hunters kill 30% of all the bucks in the state each year. So in this case, if you had a 4 buck limit, the net savings, at least on paper, would be about 13% of your bucks that would either move to the next year or be available during the current year for someone else to harvest. The bottom line is there's truth to the claim that there's a small percentage of hunters who kill a lot of bucks. Another bottom line is hunters who kill more than 4 bucks per year kill 79% more bucks than they do does, whereas hunters who kill less than 4 bucks per year kill bucks and does at about the same rate. So there's basically two different philosophies out there among hunters. Let's talk about agricultural damage for a minute. We're issuing fewer depredation permits now than in the 1990s. A lot of that has to do with less farming in certain parts of the state. Keep in mind that we still have areas where complaints and damage remain high. And there could be a lot of things going on there. Changes in commodities. Soybeans are back in favor now. People weren't planting as many beans generally when the prices were lower, you know, 10, 12 years ago. Now, as we previously discussed, you know, habitat change, high deer harvest rates, and predation by coyotes have resulted in fewer deer in many parts of the state. So why is there this difference in some of these agricultural areas that are still experiencing significant deer damage? And really the only common denominator can be insufficient doe harvest. And I say that because, you know, you've got pine trees and herbicides being used in these agricultural areas. You've got coyotes potentially impacting deer in these agricultural areas. So that really only leaves the deer harvest, particularly the doe harvest, is the common denominator. Now, many farmers will tell you that they've got a good group of hunters on the land they farm, but they'll also tell you that hunters tend to focus on bucks. And in a situation where you have no limit on bucks, hunters can repeatedly take bucks when they should take does in order to reduce deer damage. We believe a limit on bucks should shift the focus to does in agricultural areas where better population control is needed. Now, there's been talk among hunters for over 10 years in making some deer management changes here in South Carolina. Hunters indicate that they want a more modern approach to deer management. They want a limit on bucks and a tagging program to enforce that limit. Many hunters feel that bucks are exploited under the current system, and based on the data we've already looked at, that's the case. Many hunters would like to see more bucks on the landscape and have the opportunity to see more adult or mature bucks. Hunters are concerned with what they see in the woods in terms of adult sex ratios, buck doe ratios. And generally, hunters in South Carolina are tired of the brown is down mentality. Now, DNR has repeatedly measured hunter opinion on these issues. We've had 17 previous public meetings sponsored by the agency. We've done 3 additional meetings at the request of local legislators. We've done 4 surveys, including a very large survey that was completed by an independent company that's nationally recognized and specializes in natural resource-based surveys. Regardless of the technique used, results of these efforts indicate that the majority of hunters in South Carolina support a reasonable limit on bucks, support a tagging system for enforcement, and support a modest fee to pay for the tag program as long as the revenue goes back into the deer program and not the general fund. Senate Bill 454 was filed on DNR's behalf in January. It passed the Senate in March. It currently resides in the House of Representatives, where it will be debated when the legislative session reconvenes in January of 2016. These meetings are to address any remaining questions and concerns among House members. Please keep in mind that based on all this background work, DNR had to come up with a single plan supported by enough hunters that the legislature would consider it. That being the case, the proposal may not be exactly what everyone wants. Some are going to argue that the proposed buck limit is too high, or that it's too low, or that we need antler restrictions. However, at this point, any move towards a more modern approach is a move in the right direction, we believe. So what would this legislation do? It would put in place an annual limit of 4 antlered bucks per hunter, an annual limit of 4 antlerless deer per hunter. DNR would maintain ability to modify that depending on future management needs, and I'll go back to that in just a minute. Hunters would receive a set of 4 buck and 4 doe tags, and tagging would be required for all deer. Now, as far as DNR maintaining authority over the antlerless tags, it's just like we have now. And the best example of that is in the mountains up in Game Zone 1. There are very few deer in the mountains. The folks up there are very conservative about harvesting doe deer. And they can only use one of their doe tags right now because that's all that they want to be able to use. So there may be other parts of the state in the future where the population changes sufficiently that the hunters want to see fewer of these doe tags being used in their area. So you may end up with 4 doe tags, but just like you can't use them all 4 in the mountains now, you may not be able to use all 4 of them in certain parts of the state in the future. Doe days would be eliminated so we could avoid untagged deer. And I think it'd be better said that they become obsolete, because every day starting September 15th would be like a doe day as long as you still have tags. Let's talk about changes to the antlerless deer quota program. That program is the program in which the department issues a set of doe tags to the larger hunt clubs or property owners. It's a very historic program. As part of this legislation, that program would change from the antlerless deer quota program to the deer quota program. The reason for the change, it was requested by a number of the current program participants. And what this would mean is that deer quota program cooperators would receive a quota of tags for bucks in addition to the quota of tags for does that they're already receiving. Buck limits would be set based on the size of the property, the past buck harvest, and the county buck harvest rates. Keep in mind that current cooperators already have to report their harvest, so we already know, you know, kind of what the average buck harvests in certain areas are. The 4 buck and 4 doe limits would not apply. The limit would be on the property, not the hunter, just as is the case with doe deer now on these properties. Also, if you hunt exclusively on a deer quota property, then you don't need the individual tags that we've been talking about. Let's talk about fees. Hunters already pay for antlerless deer tags, up to $20 for the individual antlerless tags or $50 application fee for the antlerless deer quota program. Over half of hunters currently purchase individual tags, with the average hunter purchasing three tags, which is $15. Approximately 25% of hunters use antlerless deer quota program tags. Therefore, about 75% of hunters in South Carolina are using tags that they or someone else is paying additional fees for. Recall that the doe tag revenue is earmarked for the deer program. Our deer program in South Carolina is self-sufficient. It receives no state funds. If doe tags are included with this new buck tag program we're talking about, then our deer program loses funding. So we must have something to offset losing doe tag revenue and paying for the new buck tag program. Where the proposal currently stands is that resident hunters for $15 would receive four buck tags and four doe tags. Keep in mind that four doe tags currently cost $20. Youth, lifetime, and gratis licensees would receive these tags free upon request. Now, again, if you hunt exclusively on a quota property, then you don't need these individual tags because the property you're hunting on already has the tags. The original legislation was to charge non-residents $30 for all the tags, the four buck tags and the four doe tags. That legislation was amended, and where it stands now is that non-residents would pay $30 for the first tag and $10 for each tag thereafter. Youth, non-resident youth hunters would receive their tags free upon request. Again, if you are non-resident and hunt exclusively on a quota property, then you don't need these individual tags because the property has tags. Some final comments. DNR's heard a lot about hunters' desires to limit bucks. The data indicates that a limit should reduce the buck harvest. It may also shift the emphasis to doe deer in some of these larger agricultural areas that are still experiencing deer damage. However, we must have a tagging program to make it meaningful and to allow for better management of doe deer in the future as we attempt to mitigate the impact of coyotes. As far as deer hunting in South Carolina, we've been doing the same thing forever. We have a completely different approach compared to other states. I think a big question is, can they all be wrong and we be the only one right in our approach? With changes in our deer population, isn't it time to consider changes that will improve deer management and the future of hunting in South Carolina?
A lot of information in that. That was almost exactly what you would have heard if you'd have made one of the public meetings across the state. I actually went to a meeting in Columbia, sponsored by the Midlands QDMA chapter, and Charles was there. We talked a little bit about doing this show. He'll be with us at the start of the next hour. Hope you'll hang on. If you had any questions that you would like answered, if you tuned in a little late, didn't hear the announcement the first, if you have a question for Charles Ruth, and I have a list of them, I won't get to all of them to begin with, but if you do have one about the new deer regulations, not about season dates across the state, we might get into that if we have time, but about these proposed regulations, the number you can text to is 877-235-9405. I'm kind of torn. I've seen less deer in parts and more deer in other parts, and you talk to everybody, and they have their own slice of the pie that they see in the deer population here in South Carolina. So, I don't know. We'll listen to Charles explain a little bit of that when he comes back. He's as much as a deer biologist, he's a statistician. If you've ever been in his office, you know what I'm talking about. It's loaded with papers. So, anyway, hang on through the break. Back on the other side with Charles Ruth with the Department of Natural Resources will be here with us to talk about these regulations. You keep me guessing, I don't. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. We're not going to waste any time. For 20 years, he has been a wildlife biologist with the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources. He's the head of the deer and turkey projects here in South Carolina, and we are privileged to have him give up a little bit of a Saturday afternoon to join us on Woods and Water. Charles, welcome to the radio station.
Thank you, Roger. It's good to be back on your show.
Thank you, sir. I mentioned earlier we had a chance to talk at the QDMA meeting there in Columbia where you kind of presented the same public meeting you did with a little side notes to some of the things you picked up on. And I really appreciate you at that time saying, hey, look, let me know and I'll be there to answer whatever questions. So I guess let's get to it. You've been with DNR for 20 years. You've seen our populations. A lot of people who, like me, who grew up when there were no deer, know how the populations have gone. But for those of those deer hunters out there who weren't here when there were no deer, would you give us just a brief history of the populations in South Carolina from maybe the 60s, 70s to now?
Yeah, Roger, you know, in the coastal plain, you've got to go way back. In fact, the deer never, quote, ran out or went away in certain areas of the coastal plain where you got those big river swamps and so forth.
Okay.
But in the Piedmont, as a result of clearing of land, say, between 1700 and 1900, you know, what most folks don't understand now is that Piedmont and much of the coastal plain outside of those river swamps, it had been cut and stumped and had been planted in cotton. First off, you know, cotton was king in the South back in the day.
That's right.
And really, that's what that and market hunting and subsistence hunting for deer is what got rid of the deer.
Okay.
And that was pretty carte blanche in the upstate. Again, in the coastal plain, you had a few strongholds of deer in those river swamps.
Right.
But when you get into the 50s, and there were a few deer hanging on here and there in the Piedmont along the Broad River and along the Savannah River and Abbeville and McCormick County and so forth. But when you get to the 50s, you know, the legislature at the time and the folks at the county level asked, and the important thing is there was a wildlife department by the 50s, obviously.
Right. Right.
And we were asked to do a little bit of restocking, and we really never did a lot in South Carolina. We moved a few deer around, and it probably expedited what was going to happen naturally because you started having a lot of better habitat coming on because farming had changed. Our state started to reforest, and certainly by the 70s, we were a forested state.
Yes.
And that's kind of when things started to turn, and folks that are our age will remember 70s and 80s, the timber industry really started cutting a lot of the wood that had been regenerated naturally since the Great Depression. And that was like pouring doggone gasoline on those deer. The few deer that were out there.
Blossomed.
You know, if you're a hunter, you understand that a clear cut is a deer's best friend.
Yes.
And that deer population blew up in, you know, late 70s, throughout the 80s, and really throughout the 90s, that deer population was like a racehorse. And really around the turn of the century. And you know, the thing about it is, Roger, and you remember this, hunters got concerned in the mid to late 90s about, gosh, you know, every year we're killing more and more deer, and that can't keep on forever.
Right, yes.
And, you know, hunters got much, much more friendly with harvesting doe deer.
Yes.
As a means to control the population.
And the flip side of having all those deer was had a lot of small deer running around.
Yeah, you know, it's... And I give hunters credit for it because they understand this much better now than they used to. You can't have a lot of deer and have good deer at the same point
right.
in time.
That's right.
You know, right now we're carrying about 30% fewer deer than we were when it maxed out in the late 90s. But our antler records list, and I can't tell you for certain that this is cause and effect.
Right.
But the last 5 or 6 years in our antler records program has been really, really good.
Well, the land only has so much it can carry.
That's right. It's like a pie.
That's right.
Yeah, the habitat is like a gigantic pie. And if you slice it into a bunch of tiny slices, then nobody gets a whole bunch. But if you're dividing it amongst fewer, you got better nutrition, reproduction, survival, better body quality, you know, size, weight, antler development, so on and so forth.
Sure.
It's pretty basic, you know.
Sure. Well, I mentioned before we went to the break, I mentioned that you're a wildlife biologist and a statistician. And
well, I get by with that. You know, I get by.
Well, you do a great job of it, because if you've ever looked at the South Carolina harvest reports or filled out a deer survey and wondered what happens to it, it goes to you and you crunch numbers and you were explaining to me in your office last year, you know, over the long term, you may have some irregularities from year to year, but in a 30-year or 20 or 30-year pattern, you have some consistency over the long term and some reliance on the numbers and all. And a lot of what we get is people don't believe the numbers. You know, they have their little slice of deer, you know, what they see when they go hunting and all, and they just don't believe that either the population's down or people aren't killing as many. Take a minute and explain the math that goes into how you estimate harvest, how you estimate populations.
Absolutely. And I will say this, Roger, though.
Okay.
You know, back in the 90s, like I said, even hunters were talking about all the deer, what are we going to do with all the deer? And
right.
That started to change about 10 or 12 years ago. And now what we hear is, we don't have the deer, DNR's let us shoot too many does.
Right.
But anyway, what we use is a statistically based random survey. In fact, I am fixing to put it in the mail. I've got I generate. Here's an example. Let's say we've got 150,000 people that buy big game permits.
Okay.
In other words, that's the people that could possibly legally deer hunt. I get our IT or our licensing people to dump that list, that mailing list. I do a random selection of 30,000 of them. And that's about an 18% sample. And when you start talking to statisticians, they say, you're crazy. You don't need to sample that many.
Right.
But I want to oversample because it's not that expensive.
Okay.
Send the survey out. People fill it out. Not everybody sends theirs in. I get that back, enter it in, then I do the computations. And if you know anything about surveys, obviously the first thing that folks say is, well, I don't believe your numbers because I didn't get a survey.
That's right.
Well, in a survey, you don't survey everybody. There's no reason to do that. And plus, you can't afford to do it. But if you do enough of it, if you get responses from enough people, then it's representative as if you did talk to everybody. So
right.
That's how we get those numbers. And what I'll tell folks is, this is the same technique that showed our deer population increasing.
That's right.
And now it's showing something different. And I'll also tell people, for example, last year our harvest estimate was like 202,000 deer, you know, bucks and does combined.
Okay.
I can't tell you that's exactly how many deer were killed, and I'm sure it wasn't. But if it's wrong, it's wrong exactly the same way every year. And that's what's important, is the trend.
That's right. That's right. Well, we're talking about S-454. It passed the House. No, it passed the Senate. I'm sorry. It passed the Senate back in last March. It's. I assume they'll pull it up here shortly in January when they return.
Yeah, you know, they're going back into session here in a week or 10 days. And we've actually met with some of the leaders on the House side and the Agriculture Committee. You know, they were the impetus for us doing those public meetings this fall. And they've been very receptive. Now, there's probably going to be some amendments to the bill, minor type stuff.
Okay.
But I think what we've talked about with folks and what hunters have been talking about for a decade now, that's going to be on the table. Whether or not it passes, I don't know. I'm not a betting man, but I think this is probably at a kind of a coin toss at this point.
Okay. So you need some help. So if hunters, you're listening and you agree that our harvest is down, we need to start somewhere with changing the management of our herd, then you need to contact your legislators now.
Yeah, and it's really, Roger, it's not even a matter of the harvest being down. It's just a different approach, you know, looking at having a different approach in South Carolina. We operate unlike any other state with either in the upstate having a limit on paper and having no way to enforce it.
Right.
Or in the coastal plain having the law say there is no limit on bucks. And, of course, you know, that's not DNR. DNR does not set those limits. Those are set by the legislature.
Okay.
And there's a lot of history and politics involved in that, the tradition, history, and politics. You know, the situation in the coastal plain where it is no daily or seasonal limit, that came out of the colonial period a couple of hundred years ago,
yes.
And it's just simply never been changed.
That's right. That's right.
You know, again, no other state is even close to that. But I'll give you this.
Okay.
The best example was Alabama.
Right.
Up until recently. Alabama's got a long season like ours, okay. Not quite as long. And up until about 5 or 6 years ago, Alabama had a 1 buck per day limit. So you could theoretically kill 90 or 100 bucks, however sure. long their season is. Their hunters got sick of it. They went through a process that actually started after our process started, and they got their politicians to change it. Alabama's now got a 3 buck limit per hunter per year. One of those bucks actually has an antler restriction on it. And the satisfaction among hunters is an all-time high.
Okay.
So, you know, even the last holdout, they're happy with it, you know.
And I just saw a story that Louisiana is talking about tightening up their deer seasons and harvest limits, too.
Well, you know, Louisiana's got a 3 buck limit.
That's right.
You know, so what we're, you know, what we're talking about in the way of 4 is still going to be the most liberal buck harvest situation in the country.
Right. So, okay, 4 tags for bucks, 4 tags for doe. A lot of people texting or talking that it's unenforceable. Only honest hunters are going to abide by the tag system. Well, you would hope the majority of those of hunters are honest. But what do you say to those people who say, well, how are you going to enforce the tag system?
Well, if you look at, if you leave South Carolina, if you look at the 50 states,
okay,
drop out South Carolina, because South Carolina is the one we're talking about, drop right. out Hawaii, because Hawaii doesn't have native deer. That leaves 48 states. Okay.
Okay.
30, pardon me.
Certainly.
46 of those 48 states have a tagging situation for deer.
Okay.
We're just going to, you know, we're just going to join. So if people say it won't work in South Carolina, it must not be working anywhere.
Okay.
And something else I'll say to the naysayers about the tags is, if you're saying that you don't think it can be enforced because of a tag, that's just a cop out.
Okay.
That's all it is a cop out. And my response to that is, so you're saying we shouldn't even try to have any limits that are enforceable.
Well,
and that's all that is a bunch of smoke.
Okay. And most of your hunters are going to abide by whatever rules and regulations are out there. You're talking about a very small percentage of the hunters out there.
That's right. Inherently, people are going to do what they're supposed to do. And you know, the thing about it is, Roger, on a Saturday afternoon in deer season, a hunter knocks a deer down. He walks up to the dead deer, and he's going to have to make a decision at that point in time. Am I going to play by the rules, or am I not going to play by the rules? Because if he doesn't tag the deer, and he puts it on the four-wheeler or puts it in the truck or, you know, in any way transports it, he's running a risk of getting a ticket.
And what's the penalty?
On the public, an illegal deer nowadays with court costs, and that's the way they figure it, is $1,080.
Okay.
So, you know, again, you know, and deer processors are not involved in this from an enforcement standpoint, but someone would be a fool to take an untagged deer to a deer processor.
Correct.
I mean, that's just, you know, I don't know. I think a lot of that talk about, well, we don't believe you can enforce it, that's just the opposition, you know, making stuff up, blowing smoke.
Okay. All right. Well, another question that a lot of people ask, with the money that's being raised now, the doe tag that we sell now go into the deer program. The tags you're going to, the $15 for 8 tags you're going to do now, that will also go back in the doe tag program, correct?
Absolutely. That earmarking language in the law does not change.
Okay.
It does not change. And I'll tell you, and you know, I know there's two sides to it. Some people think, oh, this is a money grub.
Right.
But we get a lot of comments from people saying, wait a minute now, it costs me $20 right now to get 4 doe tags.
That's right.
You mean to tell me I'm going to get 4 buck tags and 4 doe tags for $15?
That's right.
DNR must be crazy. You know, why aren't they charging more?
Right.
And what our approach in this, Roger, obviously, those dedicated funds for our deer research and management program are very important. We had to make sure that whatever we asked the General Assembly to have that cost situation had to wash with what we've been doing.
Okay.
And we did our best to do that. That's why we could back it down from $20 to $15, because not everybody gets 4 doe tags right now.
Right.
We just want to keep what we've got. We're okay. not trying to grub anything out of the ordinary.
Okay. Another question a lot of people send me, and I remember these as in the 80s and all, late 70s, early 80s on in, is just a fun place to go. Even if you didn't see a deer or get a deer, you'd always run up to the – ours was Grant's Grocery. I hunted in Chester County.
Sure.
We'd run over to Grant's Groceries, eat a, as my brother calls them, a rot gut hot dog, see what everybody else had been brought in, look at the Polaroids, you know, talk to the biologist who was there, you know, taking jawbones and all that. Check stations. A lot of people want to know about check stations. They're pretty much gone and probably not coming back, right?
Yeah, they've been gone for almost 20 years now,
right.
10 years for turkeys. They ran their course. And when everybody was trying to coddle deer and turkeys, you know, make sure that I's are dotted and T's are crossed, you know, what that was, Roger, was a body count.
Okay.
It was a way of counting dead deer. Now, a lot of folks felt like it was enforcement. And there's a small bit of that was enforcement. But if you look at the technology, if people will remember what they did when they checked a deer, they walked in, said, I got a deer. They filled out a legal kill card and
right.
tore the bottom off of it and gave it to the hunter. But they weren't entering it into any kind of system. There was no system
okay.
at that point because technology wasn't there. So it wasn't like there was a red light going to go off at DNR saying this is an illegal deer.
Roger Metz has killed five deer when he should have killed four.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
So it was more of let's count dead bodies is what it was. And
okay.
we got a better way of doing that now. Plus, you know, once deer and turkeys as well, once they got everywhere, once they recovered and were everywhere, check-in compliance deteriorated because people are like, shoot, I am not going to drive by my house to drive 15 miles to go find a check station.
Okay.
And we documented that.
Okay.
So it was biasing the harvest numbers is what it was doing.
Okay.
Let me say this
too,
Roger.
Go ahead.
Many states have obviously had mandatory check for all kind of deer, turkeys, and everything. They're moving away from that in favor of electronic, you know, telecheck type
okay.
things because it's inconvenient, it's expensive, and so on and so forth.
I know electronic is an option in the future. Do you think it's going to? Do you think we'll run with the tags for a while before we move over to electronics?
Yeah, I think so. And certainly DNR supports electronic checking. And I think, obviously, there's a lot of support for that technique among hunters. There's a secondary way of counting, of estimating the harvest. We understand that. We support it. And, in fact, I'll tell you this. There was a resolution passed by the legislature last year that asked us or required us to look at other states and how they do business. We turned that response to that mandatory resolution in this week per the resolution. And again, what we found was that, yeah, everybody's using deer tags, and yeah, everybody's requiring some type of check, 90% of which is electronic checking,
okay.
you know, iPhone, internet, telephone.
Okay.
And there is a long, you know, in addition to getting hunter harvest information with electronic check, you've got an enforcement component because you get a confirmation number.
Okay. All
so
right.
You've got a tag, and then you've got a confirmation number, so everything kind of comes together from an enforcement standpoint. But again, that's in the future.
Okay.
We would certainly support it if the legislature wants to go in that direction, but we don't make the laws.
This wasn't one of the questions we talked about and all, but I want to know what was hunter support through all the meetings, the video that was posted on DNR's website. What
yeah.
was the support from the respondents for this 8-tag system?
All right, if you look at the actual in-person meetings, approximately 76% of attendees supported both the limit, as we discussed, and the tagging system as we discussed. Now, if you look at the virtual meeting, as I call it, the online meeting, it was over 80% for both of those. And the thing about a public meeting is when you get something to this stage and have a public meeting, you're basically inviting the opposition.
Okay.
But in spite of that, it was 76% in person, over 80% with people at home looking at it on their personal computer.
Okay.
So, I mean, if you look at that, this is a no-brainer.
It is. It is. But it's funny, you don't get many middle-of-the-road reactions. You get vehemently opposed or vehemently in support. There's nobody in the middle, it seems like, or else they're just not talking.
I agree. And the thing about it is, and you know this, Roger, Hunter started this movement.
That's right.
This is not new. We started monkeying with this thing over 10 years ago. In fact, I had the first set of public meetings in 2003, kind of as an exploratory thing, because we were already hearing it from hunters now about, you know, what are we doing here in South Carolina? You know, we either have no limit in part of the state or have limits that can't be enforced in the rest of the state. And our hunters are tired of it.
Yeah. Wasn't this proposed in 2011?
No. This is the first time there's been legislation.
Okay.
Yeah, now, DNR has been talking about it. Hunters have been talking about it. We finally got sponsorship on the Senate side this year in the form of, you know, S-454, as we discussed.
Well, kind of off the subject or whatever, and I've got my ideas because I've hunted a lot of some western states and all, but a lot of the questions on is, you know, well, they're not making this even across the state as far as seasons and all that. In response to that, why do we have the separate seasons for archery, muzzleloading, rifle seasons?
Again, it goes right back to the story of deer. There were always deer left in the coastal plain when they weren't around in the Piedmont. There was no hunting in the Piedmont. Those seasons, just like that no limit on bucks, is a colonial thing.
Okay.
And it's just never been changed.
Okay.
But what happened in the 50s when the folks in the upstate said, we want to try to get deer going, there was a wildlife department. And at that point, this is important, Roger.
Okay.
The legislature said, hey, we got a wildlife department. Let's turn them loose on this deer and turkey problem. That's what they're supposed to do. We're going to give them the authority to set up the seasons at that time. Now, we don't have that authority anymore.
Okay.
So what we did at that time was we looked at what other states were doing. We looked at the biology of the animal, the antler cycle, the reproductive cycle. That's how we set those seasons. And if you remember, the deer season 20 years ago didn't open until October 1.
Right.
And then we backed it into September after doing a very comprehensive look at breeding and so forth. So that's what, you know, we have, DNR had more of a hand in the upstate structure. The coastal plain is what it is. It's the way it's always been. It's never been changed. It's a colonial approach. Now, as far as the special weapon seasons, all of the states have them.
Right.
And in fact, if you look at game zone 4, the PD game zone, they actually do have an archer season. That was local, that was archers in that part of the state years ago lobbying the legislature. We want an archery only situation, and they got it. So, you know. But, you know, and I'll say this, Roger.
Okay.
As far as August 15th, and certainly I've participated in August 15th. a lot of folks do.
I know what's coming.
Yeah, you know, but, you know, I think a lot of the new is worn off of it.
Right.
But I'll tell you this. If you talk to any deer hunter, even ones that love August 15th and say, look, I know you're a deer hunter. You know something about deer biology. You know something about deer management. It is your job to set the deer season.
Right.
Virtually none of them would set it August 15th. But again, it is what it is, and people are going to take advantage of it if it's there, although I think there's a lot less participation now. If you talk to deer processors in the coastal plain,
right,
they hate it.
Yes.
They hate it because they got to stay open for a month.
Yes.
And nobody's killing any deer.
That's right. All we're killing down there in August is mosquitoes and snakes.
Well, and what concerns me from a hunting standpoint is we're advertising to the deer for a month before they are ready to be harvested.
Yeah.
You know, by the time things start changing, the bucks shed their velvet, the does start getting a little stinky, and things start picking up, the cat's out of the bag.
Right.
And you've pressured those deer, and everybody knows they want to go nocturnal anyway.
That's it. Charles, I really appreciate you coming on and talking with us. I've enjoyed our talks in the past and look forward to more in the future.
All right, Roger. Let's do it again.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Anytime.
Yes, sir. Well, there you have it, folks. Do with it what you will. But as always, make time to get outdoors. Take the back roads. I did some in Kentucky, and they were pretty cool. And don't forget that camera. I'll see you next week.
Ain't it just like a friend of mine to hit me from behind? Yes, I'm